thing and its wife.
A fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight.
I am not seeing
from Tigerland. We never weak until the final siren's gone.
Welcome to I'm so thrown by that because I could see you were muted. I didn't see the intro come up on my screen at all, so I had no idea if I was just live and everyone could see me and I was just staring blankly. It was all a little bit delayed and it just did not work how I thought it was going to work. But it seems like the intro played. I think it went through. But good evening, everybody. Hope you're doing well for this Monday night Tiger Cast show from wherever you are around the country. Let us know in chat firstly. Did that intro play for everybody? Did it work how I thought it did?
It glitched for me.
It did for you?
It glitched. It was like stop start.
Yeah. I'd love to know if it glitched for people watching or if it played smoothly or not. But for me, it bugged out pretty badly. So sorry if I was just sitting there looking at a blank screen. Oh, there you go. Intro was great. Okay, maybe it was just us then, EJ. How are you, mate? Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I've just we've got a little break now, so I've just nipped up to Bali for a couple of days for a bit of R&R.
Yes. Did you leave at quarter time like the players did?
No, I'm not on holiday, but we sat and watched till the end. And again, weirdly, I'm okay. I know that there were people losing their minds over it, but we said at the start of the season, there's going to be four or five occasions where absolutely nothing goes right. And that's what happened on the weekend. We looked off. It wasn't great, but it was on the back of a month of really solid good footy where we didn't get the chocolates, but, you know, we played really well. So let's just calm down a little bit.
Yeah, and look, like, I mean, I won't hide away from the fact that I was a bit pissed off about how the game panned out. I think it's okay to be upset and annoyed at how the game played out, as long as there's still that balance and level of understanding that we are going to cop some things like that from time to time, unfortunately. I guess the frustration probably stemmed from that we'd had such a good month of football that it really felt like a genuinely winnable game that we could reward ourselves with some effort and some 4 points before we head into the bye. And to just not even be remotely close was just, it was gut-wrenching. But, you know, we spoke about it on Monday that we knew the Swans were going to come out pretty fierce after their shellackings as well. So I wasn't really surprised on that front. I was more just a bit miffed and upset. Well, upset's probably not the right word, but disappointed about how it just fell away after one quarter. Like the first quarter was pretty okay. I was kind of okay with that. But then to not score a goal for 2.5 hours was like, what is going on?
Yeah, it wasn't an easy watch. No. It definitely wasn't an easy watch. But, you know, again, you just try and take the nuggets out. They control play so well. You just try and take the nuggets out. It was another good game from Dion. Miller continued his good form, you know. So just that was probably one of Brown's best games. So, yeah.
It was one of his best games. Yeah, it was good. He was good. We'll keep rolling with it because we'll jump into the other stuff afterwards. But Swannies won by – oh, I'm on the VFL game. They beat us by, was it 44 points? Yeah, 44 points, 11-14, 80 to 4-12, 36. Again, EJ, very inaccurate in front of goal, weren't we? And that was, it makes you wonder a little bit, like, how much did the players' heads drop when they miss some easy goals and the pressure starts mounting and mounting and mounting for the next goal and where it's going to come from? That I found that interesting, but we just weren't anywhere near good enough for long enough. And even the fact that Uze apologised post-game, you could clearly tell that they were a bit at a loss as to how it fell away after a quarter as well. But in terms of some of the players that had a good game, I agree with you. I think that Tom Brown, that was probably one of his best games for a while. I think he had 9 marks. Just seemed to read the flight of the ball well, didn't he? And he was able to work his opponent under the ball. It was almost a very Vlosten-like performance from a marking and reading the play perspective.
Yeah, well, we need it because Vlosten's not getting any younger. And it was interesting that they tagged Vlosten.
Yes.
That certainly had an impact. And it shows you how well he's rated and how well he's going this year. There was a couple of times where he got caught a yard or two off his man, but you can't hold a couple of a couple of things against him. You know, I could pick out faults with every player, but overall, yes, he's developing beautifully. He is reading the play. If he gets off the mark first, he's actually got decent closing speed. And we all know he's a good distributor, and which is what we need down back.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I don't think I gave him five, but he got close, I think.
No, well, the other player who had a good game in defence that did maybe get some higher votes was Ben Miller.
Took
8 marks, 4 tackles. He's had a pretty, like, I know we've lost like the games, but from a personal level, he's had a pretty good month, I reckon. Underrated month.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. I mean, you know, he completely blanketed Hogan last week, and, you know, he had another good game on the weekend. My one criticism, and my daughter and I were talking about it last week, and we saw it again on the weekend. My one criticism, and to be honest, as a lockdown defender, if it's his biggest issue, I'm not going to cry about it, but he's very slow making a decision when he's got the ball. He won a free kick almost on the wing, and we were streaming forward and the Swans weren't set, and he couldn't pull the trigger. His brain wouldn't. And by the time he decided to do something, everyone was set, and it was just a long bomb down the line. But that, if that's my, I mean, that's being really picky, because his job isn't to make quick decisions and, you know, distribute and things like that. He's a lockdown defender. But, yeah, no, he was great again.
I feel that problem's team-wide, if I'm being honest. They're holding the ball for a little bit too long and not pulling the trigger a little bit quicker. Luke Traynor, I thought, had another really good game. 19 disposals, 8 marks, 3 tackles. You know, and we're probably all speculating a little bit that maybe he was looking like needing a rest potentially leading into this game. And I thought he was quite good on the wing again. I know it probably divides the supporter base a little bit, so keen to hear everyone's thoughts in the comments. I like Luke Traynor, the winger. And I understand why he's there, because we've got a full back line at the moment. And I think he can make that a position for himself.
He can. He doesn't have the tank at the moment. I think it's pretty obvious. But, yeah, no, again, because he's good by foot, he's got good speed, you know, once he builds up the endurance, he's a good old-fashioned utility. We'll be able to play him down forward, on the wing, down back. He'll be able to be moved around.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit of plug and play, won't he?
Yeah.
Which, and actually, I know maybe in the past with someone like a Bolter, for example, we've maybe talked about not doing that as to not confuse him, but I really do think that Luke Traynor's footy IQ was through the roof, and I don't think him swapping positions will be an issue. He will adapt no matter what part of the ground he's on. He will be fine.
Yep. I know I said it at the time. Bolter just doesn't have the IQ to play forward. He's just not smart enough, and that's not a knock on him. He's a bloody good defender, but... Traynor, definitely, you can see that his ability to read the game is far superior.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how many people know, but he actually played on the wing in his under 18 year as well. He played in all 3 segments of the ground, so he can do it. It's not unforeign to him. I think he's going to excel there, because to have someone with that kind of skill level between the arcs, he can kind of open the game up with those inside kicks into the middle that we aren't really taking. And like you said, it's just about building the tank a little bit. But I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I really like it.
And he's making some mistakes with his disposal, but I don't mind that, because he's making the choice to take the kick.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
You know, we all saw, and I'm not comparing him, please, people, don't kill me, but we all saw Rance, and we used to just cover our eyes when he was kicking in the first few years. He's nowhere near as bad as that.
Oh, no, God, no.
But... like Rance, he's got the confidence to take the kick.
Yeah, and he's taking some dangerous kicks too. Like he's having a go at trying to make something happen. So I would much rather that happen every day of the week. Your man, Kane McAuliffe, without spoiling the next video, I've got him in my votes. I think a few of us did. 19 disposals, 7 marks, 4 tackles, 1 clearance. On 65% game time, he was the lowest percentage game time if you exclude the sub and the player who got subbed, so Mansell and Camden. That's an extraordinary set of numbers, in my opinion anyway, in a midfield where we're probably using the same 2 or 3 guys going through there for most of the day. I thought McAuliffe had a really good game. He floated back and took some nice contested marks as well, it was a really mature performance, I think, from him.
That's, you basically took the words right out of my mouth. I love the fact that he sat under the pill this week.
Yeah.
He took, you know, he took more than one mark going back with the flight and or sitting under it and knowing that there was, you know, pressure coming on. We know he doesn't lack for bravery. yeah, fair enough. yeah, look, it will be fixed. 60% will, 65% will be fixed. He's obviously playing low minutes. He had an interrupted preseason. They're really keen to play him, I think, but I think it's almost like they're building him up in season, in game.
I reckon the highest he's played is about 75, 76% was maybe the highest he's done. But so you reckon you'll get some more minutes in the back half?
Yeah, I think we'll slowly see that creep up, yes.
And I might be way off the mark with this next comment, but based on how the numbers project, it kind of almost stands to reason that if he starts to get 78 to 85% time on ground, we could be looking at a 25 to 30 disposal midfielder.
I'd say 20 to 25 because I do think that he will be slightly defensive. And I've got no dramas with that. He looks like a footballer.
Yeah. Everyone's digging the black boots as well. Workman-like, no fuss. Just get in there. Give me the footy. Let me bash through a few people. He was trying to pick the football up. And he actually hit some really nice targets on the weekend as well. He was actually, I reckon the week before, he was overshooting some of those passes, and he's obviously adjusted a little bit and was starting to hit a few, which was good.
We just need him to get one through the big sticks to get the monkey off the back, and then we'll be right, I reckon.
I know. Same as Luke Traynor. I swear, the Luke Traynor celebration is going to be epic whenever he kicks one. He's going to go absolutely bananas, I reckon.
Luke Traynor is like the 12-week-old puppy, and you get the same welcome every time you come through the door at night. He's just that excitable kid. He's absolutely going to go off when he kicks a goal.
Yeah, and I get this vibe that he's pretty lippy on the field because opposition is still getting stuck into him. So he must be talking some serious shit out there.
Excellent.
Which we don't mind. We're all about that. We're all about it. There probably wasn't too many other players that played well, if I'm being honest. But Tyler Sonzi, 18 disposals, 3 marks, 4 tackles, 2 clearances. Wait for it. One CBA, an RFC centre captured that moment with a photo that he sent to me that I had to retweet. Unbelievable to be able to capture that just on camera. What did you make of Tyler's game this week?
Yeah, it was all right. Even though he did a couple of things last week that made me nearly break my television, i.e. kicking the ball off the ground and not picking it up and blah, blah, blah. In the first quarter of that game, I really was like, oh, wow, he's going really well. I didn't have any oh wows on the weekend, but I'll tell you what, compared to another couple of senior players, he said he definitely wasn't the worst.
No. What I like with him is he's not fearful to run onto his opposite side. Like if he's got the ball on the left, he just goes. He doesn't try to do anything stupid and cut back inside to traffic to get onto his preferred foot. And look, I think there was definitely worse players than him as well on the weekend. Yeah. And I know he's a bit of a whipping boy for people and they'll probably want him to be out of the side, but I wouldn't mind him playing another game post-bye and just want to see some more CBAs, but...
Yep. Actually, there was a left foot kick that hit the target that I actually really did like.
Mm. So, yeah, I think it was later in the game. I think I saw him hit one as he was in the middle of the ground somewhere. But look, we won't talk too much more about the game because we just got comprehensively slapped. You could see the hurt in Uze in the press conference. The only one I'm going to ask you about, and I don't know where it will lead to, but I still think we got the forward setup wrong. I still don't think we should have had Fall and Sims. I appreciate and love what they're doing, and I acknowledge they'll be very good players. I just don't think that they are helping Lynch as much as we need someone to help Lynch, and I think we're going to burn Lynch out if we don't address it.
I thought you were going to ask me about Ross.
Oh, we can do that next too. Yep, that's good.
Yeah. Ross looks tired to me. He needs a spell. That's all I'll say on that. It wasn't a very good game the weekend. Yeah, look, I think if we're going to play the bigger setup, we do it with a more mature body, i.e. McKelty, right? So then you have either Fall or Sims, and you say, right, we're doing a rotation for the rest of the season, unless we get injuries and it happens, right? But we say, right, Sims, you're playing a three-week block. Jonty, you're playing the three-week block after that. Sims, you're playing the three-week block. Armstrong, you're coming in for the three-week block after that when you come back from your injury. I think we need to spin around a bit. We can't play them all because they're so physically immature.
Yeah.
It's the body-on-body contest. It's not the leading up. It's not the jumping for marks. It's just the body-on-body. We're losing too many of those contests, and we're not bringing the ball to ground, etc. One more mature body, you can play three tools, because if you've got Lynch and McKelty, they're going to not get buffeted off.
Yeah, so right.
I don't think it's the actual three tools. It's the fact that two of them are
finishing. It's the play, 100%. And I know a lot of people are saying McKelty. I've got a video coming out on this tomorrow. I've not gone for McKelty, and I've gone for the man who's taken 10-plus marks every week for the last 4 weeks. But more on that another time. But it's 100% the person playing the role as opposed to the actual setup. I think you'll find, because without ruining the entire video for tomorrow, but essentially on the weekend against the Swans, with the ease at which they were intercept marking, we were effectively taking six of our own players out of the game because Lynch, Fall, and Sims weren't marking it. And that meant, because Swans were marking it, that Steely Green, Mansell, and Seth Campbell had almost no impact because the ball wasn't hitting the ground either. So there were six players in the one half of the ground that were rendered useless for large chunks of the game because we weren't able to compete in the air physically for long enough.
Yep.
Which hurt tremendously. I think player-wise, that might be about it to touch on. We'll talk about the VFL quickly. Well, we got the win. We'll start with that part. We won by 5 points against the Swans, 8-16 to 9-5. Once again, bad kicking, bad football. For those who are watching it along with us, we really should have had that out to about a 7-goal lead at quarter time, to be honest. But yeah, we obviously didn't. In terms of disposal winners, I'll just read out the AFL listed players just so it's a bit quicker. Jacob Blight, 24 disposals, 12 marks, had a ripper. Ripper game. James Trezise, 19 disposals, 6 marks, 7 tackles, 1 clearance. Morris Jr., 17 disposals, 2 marks, 2 tackles, 2 clearances, 1 goal, 1. Now, with Morris, I'll preface by saying that he did cop a bit of a knock and was off the ground for about 10 or 15 minutes at one stage, so I'm not sure how much that impacted him going back out on the field. He certainly wasn't playing the same type of role as last week, but was still good to see him get it 17 times. My man, Jasper Elgar, 16 disposals, 5 marks, 4 tackles, 1 clearance, 3 goals, 2. Get him in. Just play him. Jesus. Tyler Young, 14 touches, 4 marks, 2 tackles. McKelty, 13 disposals, 1 goal, 6 tackles, 1 mark, 5 hitouts, 4 clearances. Now, the interesting one with McKelty, EJ, was he wasn't really playing deep forward a lot. So we were kind of rolling with Bauer and Fawcett as the two deepest forwards. And McKelty was actually up at the stoppages a lot of the time, not so much as the ruckman, but as another midfielder to try and smash through packs and get the ball moving forward. It was a really interesting way to use him, and I didn't mind it. Would you be keen to see him do a bit more of that? Might not be possible at AFL level, maybe, maybe not. What do you reckon? Could it work?
No, not at AFL level. I think, as we discussed, with the young forward setup, I'd like to see him come down and be that second physical presence in the forward line. We need it. We need a mature body in the forward line apart from Lynch, because Lynch is, I think what Lynch is showing this year is he's actually got a, he's reasonably smart, but he's just so slow now. You watch him, if he doesn't get to the contest or if the ball spills or whatever, for him to turn around and get back, it's really like watching him run in quicksand. So he's very valuable to what we are doing. but he's not the Lynch of 4 years ago. So that's why I think we need McKelty down forward, because he is moving well.
And I guess where we get caught out a lot there is when opposition teams start to switch it out of the back line, Lynch can't get from mark to mark quick enough to shut it down, and they're able to exit so easily under no pressure. Teams know this now. You see, this is how teams exit against us all the time. They'll just work it back across Lynch's side of the ground, and they're going to get almost to the wing unopposed every time. So that hurts a little bit.
And what you just said then about his stats in the VFL, I noticed that you said he had X amount of hitouts, so we can use him as the chop out in the ruck as well.
Worst case, if he's just doing it in the forward line, right, just inside the forward 50s, just so Nate's not running so far. Small win, I guess. Obviously, the big downside to the VFL game was Campbell Gray and Judson Clark. Absolutely devastating news for both players. Obviously, more so Juddy Clark with the ACL for the third time. He obviously had one pre-draft, one whilst at the club last year, or the year before, sorry, and then obviously this one now. It's just gut-wrenching. And to see his reaction on the field as it happened was just heartbreaking. Once you've done one, you know what the second and third one feels like. So he knew instantaneously that he was in all sorts of trouble. It was pretty innocuous, as they usually are. And I mean, for Campbell Gray, thankfully his isn't as bad and he doesn't require surgery, which is good. But look, thoughts massively go out to Juddy Clark. If I can find a way to send him a message, I'd love to send him a message of support like I know everyone else has. And if there's a little bit of silver lining, it's the fact that he's still really, really young. And I'm definitely not discounting him from coming back at all. I think he just signed a recent extension. And you've only got to think about players like Nick Malcheski, Menzel from Geelong. So they came back from third recos a lot later in their career. So probably a bit more difficult for them, but they were able to do it. I disagree, Peter. He won't struggle to play again. I don't think it's as clear cut as that. He's got time on his side, as in age. And the only reason why he won't make it is if he just mentally can't cope with going through the rehab again, which I probably couldn't blame him for, to be honest. But yeah, massive shout outs to Juddy Clark and Campbell Gray. And frustratingly, to this point, number one, there's a very, very good argument that you could say that both Juddy and Campbell Gray should have been playing AFL that week. But the secondary argument, the three emergencies we had on the weekend, EJ, we had Juddy, Campbell Gray, and James Trezise. Not one of them were ever going to beat the MCG based on that VFL game. We were never, ever having an emergency backup player at the G ready to go, and all three of them were at Beaconsfield. It's crazy.
Also, the fact that this has happened the week after the mid-season draft.
Yes, well, yeah.
And we can't replace a player on our list.
I think you can apply for special circumstances. Whether or not it's granted is a completely different argument, I suppose. But, yeah, horrible. Horrible to see Juddy like that. And, yeah, I'm hoping he comes back in three. Look, three on the same legs, not great, sure, but I'll back him in to come back. He seems like a pretty determined kid. So hopefully we can see him out there. But that's the VFL wrap done. We're trying to whip through stuff because we want to do a bit of a mid-season review as well. That's why we're pushing through a few different topics as well. Quickly, we'll bring up the North Melbourne death ride chart.
Right.
West Coast. Oh, EJ's had enough. He's had enough.
What? What? West Coast, what are you doing?
They clearly studied us in our goal kicking technique. It was, what was it, like 113 at some stage?
It was 113. They should have been 6, 7, 8 goals up before they were 4 or 5 goals. They should have been 10 goals up. It's absolute disgrace. Liam Baker, you are never coming back to this club again, Liam Baker. And Jack Graham, I'm watching you as well.
It's just fitting, isn't it, that for 2 weeks in a row we've pulled our hair out at our own games because of poor goal kicking. Then to watch West Coast do the same thing in a game we need them to win, just infuriating.
Yeah. That does go back to something I was going to raise about our side. Our three tools, I think they've kicked 3 goals, 11 in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's not been good.
The thing is, especially the kids, it will turn around for the better. And So the fact is that they've had the shots, so that's a positive. But, yeah, bloody West Coast.
Yeah, as is. 50 inside 50s to 18 at the end of the third quarter. What are you doing? Oh my God.
I was watching it with my daughter. The stats were unbelievable.
Off the charts.
And it was dead set. It was a shocking game of football.
And, I mean, so essentially to wrap up the death chart side of things, they're still on 8 losses. They've unfortunately leapfrogged us and they're up to 16th now. So we still have picks 2 and 3. They're just swapped around at who owns what pick. Melbourne really needed to win today as well. That would have been nice too if they had got up to create some separation. But yeah, it was a frustrating one. But honestly, and I've said this before, and this is why our Sydney loss was bad. I get it. But when you watch that game, EJ, the West Coast Kangaroos one, you still kind of feel a bit okay about yourself that we're only 13 weeks into a rebuild and they're 3, 4, 5 years respectively. And that's what they're putting up at the moment.
Yeah, as David King said this morning, you know, you look at our kids and you think, and there's been 3 or 4 of them, and you think, oh wow, gee, he looks a player. I would so much rather be Richmond than either of those two clubs for the next few years going forward. No dramas at all. We're right.
No. Interesting question from Jay Tiger. Are we going to win another wooden spoon? We could very well. But it doesn't, I don't feel like it matters so much. I think even if we were to lose the rest of the games this year, which is a genuine possibility, right? Anything could happen. It's a pretty tough draw for the back half. I'd still say we've outperformed last year and we're still shown, as long as you're not getting beaten by 100 points every week for the rest of the year, I guess. But yeah, look, it'll be a tight race between us and West Coast, put it that way.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, we had numerous flogs telling us that we weren't going to win a game this year. We're miles ahead of where we thought we'd be, and we are miles ahead of where other people thought we'd be.
Yeah.
The world was ending with all our retirements, losing all the games off the list. Dusty going, you know, it was end of days for a lot of people.
Yep.
Experts. So and here we are, and we've banged out 3 wins.
Yeah, so, exactly right. And could have had 2 more and then I won't ruin Come On Man, we'll do that next. But Jones Racing, interesting stat on Wheelo, of our top 20 rated players this year, 11 are 25 and under. That's what you want to see. You want to see the youngsters doing their thing. Eagles won't. A lot of people reckon the Eagles won't allow us to win the spoon. That's actually a good point as well. That's not too bad. All right. Well, EJ, if you're prepared, where's my audio files? Hang on.
Oh, I'm not really prepared. I was just sneakily trying to look up a couple of quotes. I'm sure the people will help us out.
Absolutely.
Will
help us out. Yeah. I've got the one he put on the AFL website, so I can read that out.
Come on, man.
It's time for.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
One of these days we're going to time that intro.
I know. It, you know what? It only plays 3/4 of it every time it's first click, so I reckon I need to do it in the green room and then do the proper one.
Yeah, actually, Jones Racing's got a very good point. This could almost have been an executive order.
Fairly close. Now, the reason why I'm looking down, I'm not being rude, I'm just finding the screenshot of the bullshittery that you're about to talk about.
But first of all, just a couple of nominations. The umpiring for poor old Melbourne today against Collingwood.
How was that push the day cost at the end?
What a stitch up. If I was a D supporter, I'd be ropeable.
Yeah.
But Andrew Dillon driving down the highway to have a chat with Bailey Smith.
Oh.
And then the AFL reporting, the AFL website reporting on their own CEO going down. And we're supposed to believe a word they say. Come on, man.
That's a rip out. That's a good one.
But this week's winner.
I'll bring up the chart.
Right. Going in there at number 5, Damian Barrett. Now, preseason, this clown, and he's lucky that that's all I'm using, this clown has actually stated, and it's there on the AFL website, and I was trying to find the video, you know, that he's he's never seen a team less prepared to win a game of football in the AFL for this season.
Yes.
And he singled out Richmond. Now, you would have thought that maybe being a North Melbourne supporter, that having your own side finish bottom two for about the last 7 years might be worth a little bit of time and attention. But no, let's try and take the cheap and easy layup, the low-hanging fruit, and have a crack at Richmond for not winning one of the last couple of games. It's not an excuse. We're in a rebuild. Come on, man. Are we the least prepared side to ever win a game of football? Or now that we've won three games, we're not allowed to lose a close one? What's going on, Barrett? You flog. You're a hypocrite.
It's incredible.
You're an AFL lap piece. You're a disgrace to the actual career that is journalism.
It's quite – and look, maybe he's just after clicks, possibly, but
– maybe he's doing a lot of work there.
You can't clip a side who wasn't meant to win a game, according to him, for now not being one game outside the eight. Like, what is he doing? Just, I couldn't believe it when I read it. I'm like, I'm sure I've heard him say something like this earlier in the year, and I'm so glad they don't delete some of their tweets and I was able to find it. But, yeah, that was staggering. That is a very solid nomination for
– He changes his opinion on a subject as often as the wind changes direction. Like,
yeah,
dead set. Honestly, it was the easiest come on man to decide all year.
Yeah.
It was just, and if we haven't got if we didn't have a couple of really serious conflicts of interest at the top of the AFL sort of tree, he'd be a lot higher on that list.
Yeah, I thought he might have squeezed in high, but I can respect the other ones are pretty big topics. And you know what? You know that Damo's going to feature in this heavily. When I didn't even have to re-download an image of him to use his head, I already had it in the uploads from previous use. So that's a telltale sign that he's going to feature regularly in that segment. Just shit ass. Anyway.
I'd rather listen to Kane Corns than listen to you, Barrett. That's how highly I rate you.
Wow. Oof, that's a big call. I like it. We're going to now jump into a bit of a mid-season review. It's obviously a mid-season point for us. We've got the bye this week, so no 4 points on offer, unfortunately. But we thought we would just take a bit of a chance to talk about the season so far, how we rank it, what we like, what we dislike. It might be hard to cover everything, but feel free to chuck questions in anyway. And, look, I suppose I'll open with that. Pre the start of the season, as you mentioned before, there's a lot of people saying that we weren't going to win a game. We were probably trying to temper a lot of expectations as well. I think I did a video about trying to manage expectations that we aren't going to be very good. We're not going to show much. I think at the round 13 mark or the bye mark of the year, I reckon we're well ahead of maybe well ahead is probably not the right one, but we're ahead of our projected curve, I reckon, EJ. Three wins. We got two wins last year. We're currently, we're 17th. I know that's nothing to boast about being 17th. I'm not at all trying to gloss over that. But the fact we're not last yet is still a good thing. And for a large chunk, we were 16th. I'm not sure if we ever got to 15th or not. But the three wins we had as well were pretty good. To get one in round one against the Blues was pretty exceptional. And no one saw that coming. And then to knock off the undefeated at the time Gold Coast Suns, who were absolutely motoring, was even more unexpected. And look, to be fair, if there was a couple of minutes left, they would have probably taken us, to be honest. But there wasn't, and we got the 4 points. And then the West Coast win, well, that ends up being a game that we should have won. So we've actually now won a game that we should have won, which is good. And I think that's just tick, tick, tick. And again, I don't want to settle for mediocre football. I don't like being down the bottom, but you've got to understand where we're at. where the football cycle's at, and then appreciate that we're showing a bit more than maybe what we thought. The Giants game as well, EJ, I know we botched it at the end, but we were two goals away from putting away a top four fancy in two quarters of football on their home deck with a heap of kids running around. And with the average age of our side and the experience these kids are getting, I couldn't be more proud at how they've played this first half of the year. There's been some small blips, but for the most part, they've done a pretty good job.
Yeah, agree. Just one more thing, Barrett. You're lucky I'm on the David Cloakes, because if I was drinking, you would have copped it 10 times harder. But, oh, man, when I had to remember, I actually got angry when it popped up. I reckon we're well ahead of the curve on where we were, where we expected to be. We've got games into youngsters. We've performed well in all but three games. We've stayed in contests. We've been blown away early and we've fought back with Carlton. We've established a lead and we've held on. We've established a lead and we've blown it. You know, we've hung tough with a team like in the Essendon game. So there's been different circumstances and I think we've handled them all reasonably well. So, yeah, I didn't see the VFL game, so I couldn't comment on the surface.
No, we should ask. So we look back at some of the games we've lost, more so the closer ones. The North Melbourne one, what was that, 3 points, 4 points, whatever it was, or slightly more?
3 points,
we were well and truly in that game. The Giants game, 3 points. Like, if we had of like the Giants game's the goal kicking, right? We categorically know that's what it come down to. The North Melbourne game, that was just a contested slogfest, and that was hard yakka. And I was probably actually more impressed we stayed in that contest for as long as we did, given the bodies of our players aren't like ready to do that yet. They're not mature enough to be able to sustain that kind of battle. And that was crazy. I think North thought that they could go into that game and smash in like that and we would just break. And I probably would have agreed with them. So the fact we could hang tough there was pretty good. So I know it's all, I mean, we can't change the past now, but we're a couple of kicks away from having another 8 points on the board. And almost being sort of up in the 14th mark.
I'm going to say something a little bit controversial here. I think it's almost a case of if we had too many more wins, it would do us more harm than good, because we realistically, another year of good draft picks would be very handy, and you don't want to slide three or four places and get into no man's land.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen sides sit like Freo. They've sat in that 6 to 14 period for what seems like forever. And prematurely getting a couple of those wins and costing ourselves a couple of slots in the draft, I think, although it would be good to get the wins and it feels good and all that, and look, I hope we get another couple of wins before the end of the season, don't get me wrong, but I think we would do an injustice if we finished any higher than 16th to ourselves.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
That's a good start.
On that one. That's a great start from James Racing. So last year we won 23 quarters all season. This year, 18 already in half a year. That shows the turnaround. And like we sort of have said a few times, last year we had 1,600 extra games of experience in, albeit a couple of them were probably checked out. But even though we still do have 8 or 9 older players still in the side, they're kind of on the older side, some of them. And the fact we've been able to do what we've done so far at the halfway mark with the kids we've got has been pretty impressive. I want to ask about Uze though. Maybe I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong, people, but I really do feel like that nothing much is ever said about him from a segment of people when we do well and are really competitive. But the moment we get a bad loss or whatever, everyone's just piling in, giving him shit, saying he's got to go, can't trust him, doesn't know what he's doing. It's like, hang on, we lost by 3 points to the Giants last week. You know something. Like, he's not telling the players to miss easy shots for goals. He's not telling the players to give up. I mean, when games like the Sydney game pan out, I don't think it's fair to put all the blame onto Uze. I think the players need to take some accountability as well. Yeah, Uze could have made some changes and mixed things up and thrown Magnus around. 100% agree. But people trying to pin the effort and the lack of intensity on Uze is just madness in my eyes. But that to one side, what have you made of his year so far? It's been, we've probably felt that this has been his first proper year, given the schmozzle of last year and he had a lot of dimmer assistants and shit like that. I've enjoyed his openness and honestness in press conferences, like not getting too carried away with the win, still saying we'll enjoy it, but it still wasn't really good enough and there's still plenty to work on. I think most importantly, though, EJ, is he's built a really, really good relationship with the younger players and the older players, and you can see that there's an element of buy-in and trust and love they have for one another, and I think it's going to hold us in good stead.
Yeah, look, I think you can see a definite change in his demeanour this year. I think last year, when everything went wrong, he's actually spent the time cementing the relationships, and then with the old people going out and then eight draftees coming in, it becomes more his team. And so now that he's got like full and real ownership, you can see that there's the ability to be unhappy and to call people out and things like that. And I think also like people saying, oh, he's not doing any changes. He's not, you know, we haven't pulled any levers. We're not changing anything when we're getting beaten. I think there's a fair bit of education going on in game during the season. So people are going to make mistakes, and if you take them out and put an experienced person in and things like this, they're not going to learn. They're not going to have the chance to revisit the situation and do it right the second time around. Just on people having a shot at Uze, though, again, and I can't believe I'm saying this, I saw it on Twitter this afternoon, on Fireball this morning, Kingy was very complimentary, and even Korn has said he's noticed a change in his demeanour. He's been happy to call things out. He's been a lot less cheerleadery, and yes, so even Korn said some nice things this morning. So
Jesus, that's good. The other thing I want to point out too is, and look, I've probably been guilty of it as well at times, but I think it's easy to get caught up in not seeing multiple game plans happening in the one game. And whilst I will often share that frustration, Tiggs made a really good point on a Wednesday night live a couple of weeks ago that we've got to remember, and a lot of coaches will say this, that in the preseason, you don't actually get a lot of time with the players to deploy a game plan these days because of how they're all managed. They've got a lot of time off and a lot of AFLPA restrictions and things like that. You don't actually get a lot of time. So with that in mind, Uze's got eight new players, obviously lost a heap of players as well. He's trying to redefine his game plan. And Tiggs kind of alluded to it, that what we're seeing now is kind of level one or the base game plan or one part of the game plan. And that's going to be our default game plan for the year. So they can learn it. Then next year, add another layer, add something else. Next year, add something else. Because if you try to add all three or four layers of what you want to do into the first preseason, you're just going to confuse the shit out of everyone, especially the young kids, and they will have no idea what's going on. It's such a big jump to go from Coates League to AFL with your structures and setups and all that kind of stuff, that to try and lob all that into one basket just was never going to happen. So it actually makes sense why we are sticking to the same game plan time after time after time. Embed it, get it down pat, shift onto the next part, and then just build it together nicely. The main downside to that is, though, I guess, is that it means opposition can work it out quickly in game. They can counter it, and we don't really do much to offset that because we're trying to master that certain game style. But I just wanted to point that out because I think it's really important to understand that because it's been a frustration I've seen a lot on the socials.
And I'll also point out that our VFL side is travelling very well.
Top four now.
Right. And you've got a bunch of AFL listed players back there who are no doubt helping, you know, the new kids along and stuff like that. So when we built up last time, this is pre-2016, like 2010, when Dimmer came in last time, I don't think we had the depth at the second level. I think what we're seeing this time is we're obviously teaching the same thing at both in both sides, but we've got a better chunk of players below the first team, and we're all, you know, we're all so come on, bring Elgar in, bring Gray in, bring Juddy in, bring, you know, like we're actually actively calling for people to come from the second side and be given a chance. I don't know in 2010, 2011, 2012 whether we could have said the same thing. So from a positivity point of view, you know, like I'm a lot more bullish about the 44 on the list, not just the 23 that go out on the weekend.
Agree. And like, I would probably say that in some cases, the VFL team maybe executes it at a better level than, or consistently than the AFL players. Different standard of football, I know, but they seem to move the ball quickly a lot more frequently and it works well for them. And like, yeah, they're in the top four now. They've done a super job. And it's no surprise that our VFL program has been widely regarded as one of the best for a couple of years now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember the alignment with Coburg. I remember going out to watch. I remember going out to watch when Plough was still coaching, to go and watch this draft pick that we hadn't watched play football, Jared Oakley-Nichols. And I saw someone chase him and I saw him absolutely crap his dax and I thought, oh no. But I saw this absolutely annoying little nugget with number 58 on his back running around and just pushing people and whatever, and that was the first time I saw Jake King.
Yeah, right. El Kingy.
And it was awesome.
What a legend. Jay Tiger, it's a good question on the selection integrity because Uze said it himself. I think maybe a downfall for him, I would have liked some quantifying around that. Like, what does that mean? What does that look like? But at the same time, he doesn't owe us supporters an explanation of what that means. That's for him and the match committee. But all it does by not quantifying it is give us reason to speculate, I guess. And I've been one who's questioned selection integrity as well. But yeah, it would have been nice to know a bit more about what the guidelines and parameters are. But yeah, I guess we will never know. But we'll move on to some of the...
So in the block of three games before the Sydney game, where we played really well, really well, really well, I know you've got to reward form, good form from the second team, but when your first team is going well, it's a question. It's not just a question of saying, oh, you've got to put this person in. Who do you take out? And that's the hard part of the equation.
Yeah, and no, in a lot of ways, I can also respect the fact that we're not swinging the axe every time we lose either, because they're kind of being mindful about maybe the how and the why, if we're still in games and whatnot. But to an extent, Jay Tiger, I know what you're getting at, but you've got to understand there's some stuff that needs to stay behind the four walls of the club, and that's probably one of them. As much as we would love an explanation, we are definitely not owed it by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, I agree with you, Jeff. He probably shouldn't have even said it because he kind of then opened himself up for those types of questions and criticisms. I think if he had his time again, he may not have used that phrase. We'll have a look at some of the youngsters though, EJ. We've obviously had a raft of draftees make their way into the club this year. So the only ones who haven't played an AFL game yet is Jasper Elgar, which should be soon, hopefully. Tash Houghton, who's obviously coming back from the ACL and not far away from playing some sort of football. Who else we got? Josh Smiley is the other one who's doing a bit of a fitness block. But if we look at some of the ones who have played a game, we'll just get some of your thoughts quickly on those guys. And even some of the ones who maybe haven't debuted for the first time this year. So even Liam Fawcett, what did you make of the big Taps debut and where do you see him at?
I am happy that he made his debut. I don't see him with the long-term plans.
Campbell Gray obviously made his debut as well, and we obviously know he's got that the knee issue currently, but he has been super impressive.
Really like him. He kind of reminds me of a cross between Duncan Fletcher and a Dylan Grimes. I really like what he brings, and I think that he has the opportunity to be a long-term member of the side. I really like what he brings. Yeah.
Tom Sims, started a bit later on in the year, but as I mean, that GWS game, my God, 7 marks, 3 contested marks. I know we've spoken about him off air, and I guess we both believe that he will be the heir apparent to Nankervis when he hangs up the boots.
Yeah. You know that I love him. you know that I love him. Someone said in the comments on the weekend, it's the first time he looked like a boy on the weekend. I agree with that. But he's got a massive desire to compete. He leaps at balls. He's good on the ground. He's just got to get Disco down. Let's get Disco back to the club for a couple of weeks and
Disco back.
Teach a couple of these kids how to kick.
Well, we'll go for a bowler with the AFLW team. He can surely spend some minutes showing the boys how to kick a footy.
Oh, a bit of evolution work. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, big, massive future Sims. Absolute steal when you consider some of the other tools that went in and around that area. I think he's going to be a ripper.
And, yeah, I think he will undoubtedly end up being our number one ruckman. Maybe not, obviously not next year or the year after. He's still got to fill out a bit and Nank will probably still be around by then. But at some point in time, I think he will take over. Harry Armstrong obviously went down with the hamstring, which was a bit disappointing because he was starting to show some good signs. But, again, another one who showed some pretty good foot skill, attacks the contest. I like what I see of Harry. He could be a steal as well.
Yeah, I didn't have him down as being as competitive as what he is. I saw Jonty is the one that seemed to chase everything and stuff like that, but I was really impressed with the work that Armstrong was doing when he didn't have the ball. Of the three, he's a really nice set shot. They're all different, as we've discussed before. He's going to be the one that plays out the square, I reckon.
And it's interesting when you see the fitness reports from Serple talking about this is now maybe the third week in a row about him putting on some size. So he could be a big unit when he comes back in the upper body department. Hopefully that is balanced out with his aerobic and sprinting abilities. But I think he's going to be a ripper player. And I think there'll be a lot of clubs in about 5 years wondering why the hell did we pass up on him and let him get through to the Tigers. Jonty Fall. You can't not love what Jonty Fall does. And I know we probably think that there's not room for him and Sims at the moment, but in 4 or 5 years' time, a Sims, Fall and Armstrong tree up front is going to be fun to watch.
The Twin Towers, all three of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Terry's Triangle, it's back.
And you know, like we talked about last week, his work off the ball, laying that shepherd for green. You know, he's got that real work ethic without the ball, like of the three, clearly the highest at this stage. And he's aerobically, he seems like he can get up the ground really well as well, which will be very useful because we need Grok.
Grok's in the house.
Right. I should just let Grok put comments in the side. Yeah. Yeah,
Jonty just needs to learn how to snap around the corner from 15, young man. You've got to nail those ones. Sam Lawler, the number one pick, who we would all dearly love to see in the midfield a lot more when he's playing, but we understand, I suppose, the rationale behind the split between forward and midfield. He had to play even more forward in a couple of games than we were missing Lynch. But I think there's been a few times, maybe more often than not, that he's definitely shown why we opted to take him at number one.
100%. As I said previously, he reminds me a lot more of Dangerfield than he does of Dusty. But unlike Dangerfield, he can kick. Lawler is Horn Francis without the flog.
Fair enough.
We just have to keep reminding ourselves that he'd never really done a preseason because he was a cricketer.
Yep.
And he had an interrupted preseason. I actually thought, you know, you always go, oh, you know, what about O'Sullivan? What about this player? What about Langford? You know, is he the right one? But it doesn't matter. They're all going to be good players. It doesn't matter. We've picked a player that is going to be a great player at number one.
Yeah, he's been super. We've said it before, the thing that stands out for me with Sammy Lawler is the composure that he has in traffic. Like, he's running against the flow of play. Against Brisbane was one that stood out. Or might have been it was Gold Coast late in the game against the Suns. In the defensive 50, running just in and out of traffic, waiting for the right option to come up, gives the handball off, and away we go. And I know I've been on the record a few times saying that I would love his kick-to-handball ratio switch and be more kick-focused because he's a weapon, but I can also appreciate him being the team player that he is, bringing others into the game and just picking the right option and playing it smart. And I've got no doubt that over time that his kicking will start to become more prolific and more frequent. But he can kick a goal as well. He's a great contested mark. He's a dangerous matchup up forward. And like we've said a few times, this year is the worst version that we've seen of him, which is scary. So onwards and upwards. Luke Traynor, I think we could probably say that Luke Traynor's been the pick of the bunch by way of the amount of football he's played and how he's played it on a consistent basis. I think we all knew he was going to be a good player, and he's definitely going to be one that in 5 years' time, clubs are like, shit, we shouldn't have worried about the talk of concussion. But I guess we were in a unique position, EJ, where we had 8 picks that we could roll the dice on a couple, and maybe Houghton and him were the two you roll the dice on. And we've landed an absolute beauty. He's an unbelievably good player.
Yeah. The rolling the dice is the right phrase, and it was the right call.
Yes.
I mean, I know previously, you know, you go back and everyone has a crack at us about not taking Franklin at the time. And there was obvious issues about his off-field demeanour, and that was well known, and Hawthorn rolled the dice. We went the safe option, and everyone thought that Tamlin was going to be a good player anyway. We didn't roll the dice. A couple of years later, you've got a kid where we rolled the dice, and he ended up wearing number 4, and he was all right.
Yeah, he turned that okay.
You're right. It is so much easier to take the risk when you think you've banked a couple before you make the pick.
Absolutely, because other clubs around us maybe only had one pick to take in the draft, so they've got to get it right. Like, could you imagine the backlash if a club had one pick and picked the one that was a bust? So we definitely had a luxury in that space. And I've seen a few comments about Traynor's kicking. He has missed some targets recently, but what we were saying earlier is I'm okay with it because he's trying to take a risky kick. If it doesn't come off, who cares? He's going to learn from it. He's going to get better at it. I would rather him do those types of kicks and turn it over than just bomb it 40 metres down the line and be predictable like everyone else. But that aside, there's always going to be stuff he can work on. But he's a competitive animal. And I think long-term he will end up being a winger for us. I'm sold on that because, well, I guess at one point we're going to lose Flosten and Broad. So maybe that reshuffles things a little bit. But he's still got Campbell Gray. He's still got Josh Gibkiss. So there's a few other players in the mix to come back and can play a role. But, yeah, I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Luke Traynor. I think that was it. Is that all? I'm pretty sure that was all 8. I think we got to. But next cab off the rank has to be Jasper Olga, though. I think he's going to be one that will, I think, change our forward line dynamic. He's a half forward that can play as a half forward. Good goal sense, and I think they're maybe just getting him to work on his pressure stuff a little bit, but very excited about what Jasper can add to the mix as well.
Yeah, get him in. I'm on board.
Who's the second worst rated kick? Is that Traynor the second worst rated kick?
Yeah.
Yep. In the comp, Jesus.
Yep.
It doesn't. Wow, the eye test doesn't make me feel that, but it's interesting.
It's because. So what it is what kick you try and make is given a difficulty rating, and he's actually been missing the gimmies, the expected kick having a high percentage of finishing. So that marks you down really harshly. So, you know, like there's been a couple of times where he's kicked it across goal and it's been like a 20-meter kick to a teammate and he's gone over the head or whatever.
Yeah.
That gets a big cross and that takes your ranking down. So it's like expected goals, right? You're in front, you're expected to kick it 80% of the time. If you are one that misses at a higher rate, you are considered, you know, poor or whatever.
Okay. I'm with you. I'm with you.
It will adjust over time.
Yeah, yeah. No, it definitely will. Definitely will. Exactly. So, yeah. And to Aaron's point, all the draftees have 100% impressed when they've come in and had their chance. And we're possibly still see the best one yet to come in Taj Houghton, not to put immense pressure on the kid. You can just sense the excitement at the club about this kid playing football. And make no mistake, when he plays his first VFL game, the stream's going to break. They won't be able to contain all the bandwidth with people trying to tune in and watch that. And I pray to God it's at Frankston. Just enough said on that front. Smiley, well, yeah, I mean, again, he could again be long-term one of the best ones too. Like, if you think back to the draft period, at some point in time, Sam Lawler was ranked number one and obviously went number one. Josh Smiley, for a long period of time, possibly even a year, was touted number one. Luke Traynor was touted, I think, in the top five. Taj Houghton was touted top three. Some people had him at one before he went down. So I know there's a long way to go, but we've maybe picked up four in the top 10. And even Harry Armstrong. I mean, I remember I made a video about how Richmond might be able to get him at pick 10. And I got laughed at. People said, there's no way he's getting the pick 10. There's three clubs that'll take him beforehand in the top eight. And he gets to pick 20 odd, still there. Thank you very much. So he could be another one that that could end up being an absolute steal. So, like we mentioned at the time, EJ, it's a Toshe legacy draft, that one.
Yeah. Yep. And I think that this is going to be the draft for us where we've got the highest hit rate.
Agree. Yeah, agree. Like, typically you miss a couple. It doesn't feel like that just yet, which is good. Well, before we wrap up, the last thing I want to do, and I want everyone's involvement as well, is I want you to, EJ, to give our season to date a grade. So whether you want to rank it out of 10 or whether you want to do the old school school format, so an A+, B, whatever, which do you think we should go with? Which ranking system? We'll make it universal. You pick which system.
Let's do the school report.
School report. All right. So everyone in chat watching, send through your school report rankings. What do you rank the Richmond season so far up until this point using the old school terminology, A+, B+, whatever you want to be. So EJ, what are you going with for your school report mark of the Tigers?
My school report mark is a B+. Much improved student, learning very well. Some hiccups with concentration has seen some marks slip, but has overachieved on other occasions. Still young enough to learn, can see room for further improvement.
Yeah, that reminds me of my old, gets distracted in class easily every time I cop that shit. I'm probably on the B to B plus line as well. I just think that we've already exceeded the amount of wins we had last year. And I think above everything else that we've just played a better brand of football. We've looked like we've got a plan. And I know we can't execute it for the full four quarters, but that'll come in time. So I will look at it in regards to when we are playing our football, what does that look like and how does that seem to stack up? And our brand of football stacked up tremendously well against the Giants for a half and we almost had them done. So, yeah, hopefully we can see that nudge towards an A+ by the end of the year. Well, okay, put it this way. What would it take to transform a B+ into an A-, A+? What milestones would we need to hit to reach that mark?
If we're in another couple of close games and we can close them out and further development and exposure to more kids. Elgar, Smiley, Houghton, etc.
I reckon
Another two wins.
Yeah, I think to get it to an A or an A minus, I'd want to see another two wins to not have any 100 point losses. And I'd like us to kick 100 points at least once in the year. If we can kick 100 points at least once, win two more games and not get beaten by 100 points, I would happily give that an A+, I reckon.
That's a good point.
It's just unfortunate that we've had those chances to win those extra couple of games, but that's it. Learning well but easily distracted. That was my report card every year. That's exactly what it was. But no, it's interesting. Good to see people put through their reports there. What have I missed? Which comment?
Carlton and Essendon both missing the eight would be an A+.
Oh, I mean, that would be a huge win. Could you believe they were in the bottom four before their win?
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't.
That was, yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
Okay.
If Carlton finished one game outside the eight and we've beaten them in round one, how good's that?
That's a reason to celebrate. But Darren, we should have five wins, and it's annoying we've lost them. But to EJ's point earlier, maybe it's not necessarily the worst thing with relevance to draft picks. The last thing we'll talk about very quickly, I know we're over an hour and I apologize to everyone, but you're all still tuning in, so we appreciate it. I just want to give a bit of a chat about the national champs, EJ, that are going on currently, and just get some of your thoughts quickly. But Louis Callaway played his second game. we'll bumble our way through it. It's fine. Louis Callaway had his second game for SA on the weekend, 19 disposals. Looked pretty good again. I still feel like he's playing a little bit within himself. I feel like he's a bit, what's the word? Starstruck's not the word, but I think he understands the pecking order with Sharp in there, that he's really feeding Sharp. And Sharp had a ripper game, 32 touches, two goals, was unbelievably good. But Vic Metro shit the bed. They were horrible. And like Duff Tyler is the name that's been thrown around a lot as a high-end pick. Not sure he did himself. He played okay, but I'm like, oh, I don't really see.
Is he the tall dude?
Yeah. So he did all right. And then Sam Grill, the one that we're probably all liking because of his speed, they plonked him at half back and he kicked it twice. So I'm not sure what they're doing there. But I just – tell me if I'm wrong in chat, if anyone else felt the same way or if I'm in isolation. But watching some of these games, I don't get the same feeling about the draft of last year in terms of the talent, the depth. And the more I watch these championship games – the more I actually feel comfortable about trading the two picks, if I'm being totally honest. If we can land a more established player that we would love that fits our club, i.e. a Reed or a Butters, the more I see those games played, the more I'm like, you know what? We maybe aren't missing out on too much here. Let's roll the dice. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. Have you caught any of it, EJ?
No.
No?
We don't really need at all anyway, do we? With Duff Tyler or?
Well, probably it depends on, I guess, long term view. If you could pair him with Sims as ruck forward, it might be nice. But only if Duff Tyler's playing at the level that we kind of hope he might play at. But yeah, it's, he just didn't set the world on fire so far. He did okay, but yeah, didn't do as much as I would have liked him to have done. Just so quickly on some other kids coming through as well before we wrap up. Jack Leese played another game on Thursday night, just gone. It was shithouse conditions. I'm in the third quarter now of the highlights, blowing a gale, pissing rain. And I don't know how many of all of the Sandful 18s players are playing for the 18 squad for the relevant clubs. But he was definitely spending a bit more time up around stoppages, around the ground, doing some midfield work, which was good. Kicked a goal. I think he ended up with 16 touches, so I'll get those highlights up soon. Archie Daffy had another really, really good game in the APS the other week. I think he was close to best on ground. He just missed the best on ground medal. Kicked a couple of goals, 20-odd disposals, went at high 80s disposal efficiency. And he's actually been doing a bit more inside work as well to go with his outside game. And there's been a few good reports about what that's looking like currently, having a blend of both inside and outside. So he's a 2026 prospect, but that's some good signs as well. But I think that's about it. Anyway, that should be it for now, I reckon. But thought it was good to do a mid-season wrap-up. Wednesday night, folks, if you're around Wednesday night, we're going to be doing another live, and we're going to be going through our round one for 2026 Best 22, which has been extraordinarily difficult. And we're also going to put forward some players that might be on the chopping block from the list this year that may not make it next year, and what that could look like. So keep an eye out for that live Wednesday night, because there's obviously no behind frenemy lines this week. Thursday night, I might do another live. I want to do one, maybe like a tier list with the audience to be able to get your views on a few certain things. So keep an eye out on that as well. Mid-season, there's a mid-season video coming where I've got all of your thoughts. I put that call out on Facebook and Twitter to send through some video footage of all of your answers. So we'll compile that too. And other than that, though, folks, enjoy your week off footy. EJ, enjoy Bali. He's not really going to Bali. It's just the image behind him. But, yeah, I think it's coming a good time, EJ, the time off for the players. Yeah. And, I mean, we couldn't have a much more difficult game if we tried it, I reckon. The Bulldogs game, first game back.
Yeah, they're going all right. It's all part of the development.
That's it.
It is what it is.
Refresh, reset, and we'll go again. But thanks again to everybody for tuning in tonight. Appreciate the love and support. And we will see you all on Wednesday night we're going to cop some serious heat for these teams. I just know it, but it's a hard exercise. What I'll encourage you all to do before you join us on Wednesday night, because it would be easy just to shit cans from what we put up, do your own best 22 for round one 2026 on the assumption that everyone is fit and firing and ready to go, and just see what you come up with and look at the players you've left out. It's difficult. It's difficult. So
it's very hard.
It is. But have a wonderful night, everybody, and we'll see you on Wednesday night. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.